touching yourself?
A hiss. Yes.
She whimpered, rubbing her thighs together again.
Are you?
Her hand drifted beneath the waistband of her shorts. Now I am. He groaned.
Are you wet?
Soaking.
Gods, he begged, tell me what you're doing.
She flushed. She'd never done anything like this. But if she and Hunt couldn't be together, she'd take what she could get. She slid her finger into her sex, moaning softly. I have a finger inside myself.
Fuck.
I wish it was yours.
Fuck.
Was he close then? I'm adding another, she said as she did, and her hips bucked off the bed. It still doesn't feel as good as you.
His breathing turned sharp. Open up that nightstand, sweetheart.
Frantic, she grabbed a toy from the drawer. She shimmied off her shorts and her drenched underwear and positioned the vibrator at her entrance. You're bigger, she said, the phone discarded beside her. Another primal sound of pure need.
Yeah.
She pushed the vibrator in, her back arching. Oh, gods, she panted.
When we fuck for the first time, Quinlan, do you want it hard, or do you want a long, smooth ride?
Hard, she managed to say.
You want to be on top?
Release gathered through her body like a wave about to break. I want my turn on top, and then I want you behind me, fucking me like an animal.
Fuck,
he shouted, and she heard flesh slapping against flesh in the background. I want you to ride me so hard I'm screaming, she went on, driving the vibrator in and out. Gods, she was going to explode.
Anything you want. Anything you want, Bryce. I'll give it to you.
That did it. Not the words, but her name on his tongue. Bryce moaned, deep in her throat, her pants coming quick and wild, her core clenching around the vibrator as she pumped it in and out, working through her climax. Hunt groaned again, cursing, and then he fell silent. Only their breathing filled the phone. Bryce lay limp against the bed.
I want you so badly,
he ground out. She smiled. Good.
Good?
Yeah, because I'm gonna fuck your brains out when you come home to me. He laughed softly, full of sensual promise.
Likewise, Quinlan.
Therion sat atop the smooth rock, half submerged by a bend in the middle of the Istros, and waited for his queen to respond to his report. But the River Queen, lounging on a bed of river weeds like a pool float, kept her eyes closed against the morning sun, as if she hadn't heard a single word of what he'd been explaining about the Bone Quarter and the Under King. A minute passed, then another. Therion asked at last,
Is it true?
Her dark hair floated beyond her raft of weeds, writhing over the surface like sea snakes. Does it disturb you to have your soul sent back into the light from whence it came? He didn't need to be captain of intelligence to know she was avoiding his question. Therion said,
It disturbs me that we're told we rest in peace and contentment, yet we're basically cattle waiting for the slaughter.
And yet, you have no problem with your body being sent back to feed the earth and its creatures. Why is the soul any different?
Therion crossed his arms. Did you know?
She cracked open a warning eye, but she propped her head on a fist. Perhaps there is something beyond the second light, someplace our souls go even after that. For a glimmer, he could see the world she seemed to want, a world without the Asteri, where the River Queen ruled the waters, and the current system of soul recycling remained because, hey, it kept the lights on, literally. Only those in power would change. Perhaps that was all she wanted Emil for, a weapon to ensure her survival, and triumph in any upcoming conflict between Ophion and the Asteri. But Therion said,
The search for Emil Renast continues. I thought I had an easier way to find him, but it was a dead end.
Tracking Pippa's string of bodies would have to remain his only path toward the kid.
Report when you have anything.
She didn't look back at him, as the river weeds fell apart beneath her, and she gently sank into the blue water. Then she was gone, dissolving into the Istros itself and floating away as glowing blue plankton, like a trail of stars soared through the river. Was a rebellion worth fighting, if it only put other power-hungry leaders in charge? For the innocents, yes, but Therian couldn't help but wonder if there was a better way to fight this war, better people to lead it. Chapter 41. A week later, Rune stood beside Cormac and smiled as Bryce sweated in the Ox facility's private training ring.
You're not concentrating, Cormac scolded.
My head literally aches.
Focus on that piece of paper and simply step there.
You say that like it's easy.
It is.
Rune wished this were the first time he'd heard this conversation, witnessed this song and dance number between Bryce and Cormac, as the prince tried to teach her to teleport. But in the week since all that major shit had gone down, this had been the main highlight. Their enemies had been unnervingly quiet. When Cormac wasn't attending various fae functions, Rune knew his cousin had been hunting for Emile. Rune had even gone with him twice, Bryce in tow, to wander the various parks of Moonwood, hoping the boy was camping out. All to no avail, not a whisper of the kid anywhere. Therian had reported yesterday that he couldn't find the boy either. From Therian's unusually haggard face, Rune had wondered if the mare's queen was breathing down his neck about it. But no more bodies had been found. Either the kid was here, in hiding, or someone else had gotten him. Bryce inhaled deeply, then shut her eyes on the exhale.
All right, let's try this again.
Her brow bunched, and she grunted.
Nothing.
Cormac snorted.
Stop straining. Let's return to summoning shadows.
Bryce held up a hand.
Can I have a hall pass, please?
Rune laughed. She'd had little luck with the shadows either. Starlight, yes. Lots and lots of starlight. But summoning darkness? She couldn't manage so much as a bit of shade. If Apollyon wanted an epic opponent, Rune was inclined to tell the Prince of the Pit that it might take a while.
I think my magic's broken, Bryce said, bending over her knees and sighing.
Cormac frowned.
Try again.
They'd had no word from anyone, even Agent Daybright, about what had happened with the shipment of ammo and the new mech suit prototype. The news hadn't covered it, and none of Cormac's agents had heard anything. That quiet had Cormac worried, had Rune on edge too. Ethan had settled easily into Rune's house, weirdly enough. He stayed up late playing video games with Deck and Flynn, as if they'd been friends their entire lives. What the wolf did with his time while they were all at the Ox, Rune had no idea. Rune hadn't asked him about what the Hind had said at the bar regarding Bryce, and Ethan sure as hell hadn't mentioned it. If the wolf had a thing for his sister, it wasn't Rune's business. Ethan was a good housemate, cleaned up after himself, cleaned up after Flynn, and was excellent at beer pong.
Bryce sucked in a sharp breath. I can feel it. Like this giant cloud of power right there.
She ran a finger over the eight-pointed star scarred between her breasts. Starlight pulsed at her fingertip, like an answering heartbeat.
But I can't access it.
Cormac gave her a smile Rune assumed he meant to be encouraging.
Try one more time, then we'll take a break.
Bryce began to grumble, but was interrupted by Rune's phone ringing.
Hey, Deck.
Hey, Bryce with you?
Yeah, right here.
Bryce jumped to her feet at the mention of her name.
What's up?
Bryce leaned in to hear, as Declan said.
My program finally finished analyzing all the footage of Danica at the gallery. Jessica was right. It found something.
Bryce didn't know whether it was a good thing or not that Declan had finally concluded his search. Sitting around her new coffee table, a sad imitation of the original, but one Ethan had paid for, an hour later, She watched Declan pull up the feed. She hadn't dared call Hunt, not when one wrong move with Celestina could keep him away even longer. Declan said to her, Rune, and Cormac,
It took so long because once it compiled all the footage, I had to go through all the shots with Danica.
He smirked at Bryce.
Did you ever work?
Bryce scowled. Only on Tuesdays. Declan snorted, and Bryce braced herself for the sight of Danica, of Lahaba, of the old gallery library as he clicked play. Her heart twanged at the familiar corn-silk blonde hair, with its vibrant dyed streaks braided down Danica's back. At the black leather jacket with the words, Through love, all is possible, stamped on it. Had the flash drive already been sewn into it?
This is from 2 months before she died, Declan said quietly.
There was Bryce, in a tight green dress and 4-inch heels, talking with Lahaba about fangs and bangs. Danica was lounging at the desk, boots propped up, hands tucked behind her head, smirking at Bryce's regular argument that porn with a plot did not equal award-winning television. Lahaba was countering that sex didn't cheapen a show, and her voice. Rune's hand slid across Bryce's back, squeezing her shoulder. On the screen, Bryce motioned to Lahaba to follow her upstairs, and the two of them left. She had no memory of this day, this moment. She'd probably gone to grab something and hadn't wanted to leave Lahaba alone with Danica, who was prone to riling the sprite into the hottest of blue flames. A second passed, then two, then three. Danica moved, swift and focused, like she'd been using the time lounging at the table to pinpoint where she needed to go. She headed straight to a lower shelf and pulled off a book. Glancing at the stairs, she flipped it open and began snapping photos with her phone of the inside, page after page after page. Then it was back on the shelf. Danica returned to her chair and lounged, pretending to be half asleep when Bryce and Lahaba returned, still arguing about the stupid show. Bryce leaned in toward the screen. What book was that?
I clarified the image.
Declan pulled up a frame of the book right before Danica's black sparkle-painted nails grabbed it. Wolves Through Time, Lineage of the Shifters.
You can see her finger going to some text here, Declan went on, clicking to another frame.
Danica had opened the book, skimming over the text with a finger, tapping something right near the top of the page, as if it were exactly what she'd been looking for. Bryce, Declan, and Rune studied the still frame of the book in Danica's hands. Cormac had departed upon getting a call that he would not, or could not, explain. The book was leather-bound and old, but the title indicated that it had been written after the arrival of the Vanir.
It's not a published book, Declan said, or at least it predates our current publishing system, but as far as I can tell, no other libraries on Midgard have it. I think it must be a manuscript of some sort, perhaps a vanity project that got bound. Any chance there's a copy at the Fae Archives?
Rune asked her. Maybe, Bryce said, but Jessica might still have this one at the storage unit. She pulled out her phone and dialed quickly. Jessica answered on the second ring. Yes, Quinlan. You had a book at the old gallery, Wolves Through Time. What is it? A pause. Rune and Deck picked up every word with their fey hearing. So you did look into the footage. Curious, wasn't it? Just, please tell me, what is it? A history of wolf genealogy. Why did you have it? I like knowing the history of my enemies. Danica wasn't your enemy? Who said I was talking about Danica? Sabine, then? A soft laugh. You are so very young. I need that book. I don't take demands, even from starborn princesses. I've given you enough. Jessica hung up.
That was helpful, Declan groused.
But 20 minutes later, Marin buzzed to say that a messenger had dropped off a package from Miss Roga.
I'm disturbed and impressed, Rune murmured, as Bryce opened the nondescript package and pulled the leather tome free.
We owe Jessica a drink.
Danica snapped photos of the beginning pages, Declan said, now reviewing the footage on his phone. Maybe only the first three, actually, but I think the page she tapped was the third.
Bryce opened the book, the hair on her arms rising. It's a family tree. Going back. Does this go all the way back to when the Northern Rift opened? 15,000 years ago.
Rune peered over her shoulder as Bryce skimmed.
Gunthar Fendir is the latest and last name here.
Bryce swallowed. He was the Prime's father.
She flipped to the third page, the one Danica had been most interested in.
Niklaus Fendir and Ferris Havelin, the first of the Fendir line.
She chewed on her lip.
I've never heard of them.
Declan tapped away on the computer.
Nothing comes up.
Try their kids, Bryce suggested, giving him the names.
Nothing.
They went through generation after generation until Dec said,
There, Catra Fendir. From here, yeah, there's an actual historical record and mentions of Catra from there on out, starting 5,000 years ago.
He ran a finger up the tree, along the generations, counting silently.
But nothing on any of these Fendirs before her.
Rune asked,
Why would Danica feel the need to be secretive about this, though?
Bryce examined the first two names on the list, the ones Danica had tapped like she'd discovered something, and countered.
Why were their names lost to history?
Would Ethan know?
Declan asked.
No idea.
Bryce chewed on a hangnail.
I need to talk to the Prime,
Rune protested.
Need I remind you that Sabine tried to kill you last week?
Bryce grimaced.
Then I'll need you two to make sure she's not at home.
Bryce didn't dare inform Hunt over the phone what she was doing, why she was doing it. She'd risked enough by calling Jessica. But not having Hunt at her side as she slipped past the guards at the den's gate felt like a phantom limb. Like she might find him in the shadows beside her at any moment, assessing a threat. Declan was currently arguing with the den guards about some imagined slight, and at the Ox headquarters, well, if they were lucky, Sabine had already arrived to meet with Rune about an urgent matter. Bryce found the Prime without much trouble, sitting in the shade of a towering oak in the park that occupied the central space of the den. A gaggle of pups played at his feet. No other wolves in the area. She darted from the shadows of the building's columns to the wooden chair, a few curious pups perking up at the sight of her. Her chest squeezed at their fuzzy little ears and waggly tails, but she kept her gaze on the ancient male.
Prime,
she said, kneeling on his far side, hidden from the view of the guards still arguing with Deck at the gates.
A moment of your time, please.
He cracked open age-clouded eyes.
Bryce Quinlan,
he tapped his bony chest.
Oh, whoa.
Rune had told her what the Prime had said during the attack. She'd tried not to think of how much it meant to her.
Your bloodline, the Fendir lineage. Can you think of why Danica might have been interested in it?
He hesitated. Then motioned to the pups, and they scattered. She figured she had about 5 minutes until one of them blabbed to an adult that a red-haired fey female was here. The Prime's chair groaned as he faced her.
Danica enjoyed history.
Is it forbidden to know the names of your first ancestors?
No, but they are largely forgotten.
Do Ferris Havelin and Niklaus Fendir ring any bells? Did Danica ever ask about them?
He fell silent, seeming to scan his memory.
Once. She claimed she had a paper for school. I never learned what became of it.
Bryce blew out a breath. There hadn't been any papers about wolf genealogy in the secret coffee table stash.
All right. Thank you.
This had been a waste of her time. She got to her feet,
scanning the park, the gates beyond. She could make a run for it now. The Prime halted her with a dry, leathery hand on her own, squeezed.
You did not ask why we have forgotten their names.
Bryce started.
You know?
A shallow nod.
It is one scrap of lore. Most of my people were careful to ensure never made it into the history books. But word of mouth kept it alive.
Brush crackled. Shit, she had to go. The Prime said,
We did unspeakable things during the first wars. We yielded our true nature. Lost sight of it, then lost it forever. Became what we are now. We say we are free wolves, yet we have the collar of the Asteri around our necks. Their leashes are long, and we let them tame us. Now we do not know how to get back to what we were, what we might have been. That was what my grandfather told me, what I told Sabine, though she did not care to listen. What I told Danica, who...
His hand shook.
I think she might have led us back, you know, to what we were before we arrived here and became the Asteri's creatures inside and out.
Bryce's stomach churned. Is that what Danica wanted? It wouldn't have surprised her.
I don't know. Danica trusted no one.
He squeezed her hand again.
Except you.
A snarl rattled the earth, and Bryce found a massive female wolf approaching, fangs exposed. But Bryce said to the Prime, You should talk to Sabine about Ethan. He blinked.
What about Ethan?
Did he not know? Bryce backed away a step, not letting the advancing female out of her sight. She kicked him out and nearly killed him. He's living with my brother now. Those fogged eyes cleared for a moment, sharp and angry. The female lunged and Bryce ran, sprinting through the park to the gates, past the guards still arguing with Declan, who winked at them and then burst into a run beside her, into the bustle of Moonwood. More questions dragged along behind her with each block they sprinted. She had every intention of collapsing on her couch and processing things for a long while. But when they got back, Cormac was waiting outside her apartment, bloody and dirty and...
What happened to you?
Declan said, as Bryce let them into the apartment, flinging the door open wide. Cormac helped himself to a bag of ice from the freezer, pressing it to his cheek as he sat at the kitchen table.
Mordok nearly snared me at an intel pickup. 6 other Dread Wolves were with him.
Did Mordok send you? Bryce asked, scanning the battered prints. If he had, if Cormac was tracked back here?
No, I kept downwind, even for his nose. And if any of his soldiers did, they're not a problem anymore.
Was the blood on his hands not his own, then? Bryce tried not to sniff it.
What'd the intel say?
Declan asked, going to the window to scan the street beyond, presumably for anyone who might have followed Cormac.
The hit on the spine was successful, Cormac said, face hard beneath the blood and bruises. The Asteri's new mech suit prototype was attained, along with an invaluable amount of ammunition.
Good,
Declan said. Cormac sighed.
They're shipping the prototype here.
Bryce started.
To Lunathian?
To the Coronal Islands.
Close enough, 2 hours away by boat.
To a base on Idra.
Shit,
Dec said.
They're going to start something here, aren't they?
Yes, likely with Peppa and her Lightfall squadron at the head.
Don't they know she's nuts? Bryce asked.
She's successful with her ops. That's all that matters.
What about Emil? Bryce pushed. Was she successful with him?
No, He's still out there. The agent said the hunt for him continues.
So, what do we do? Deck asked Cormac. Go to Idra and convince them not to let Pippa have access to all those weapons?
Yes, Cormac nodded to Bryce. Send an order to Captain Keros. And I believe we're also going to need Hunt Athalar's expertise.
Chapter 42. Bryce was just walking down the shining hallway to Celestina's office when her phone rang. Juniper. Bryce sent her to audio mail. A message came through instead. Call back now. Dread burning like acid through her, Bryce dialed, praying nothing had happened with Fury. Juniper answered on the first ring.
How dare you?
Bryce halted. What?
How dare you call Gorgon?
Bryce swallowed. What happened?
I'm principal, that's what happened.
And that's a bad thing? She was due to meet with Celestina in 1 minute. She couldn't be late.
It's a bad thing, because everyone knows that Princess Bryce Dannon put in a call and threatened to pull the Autumn King's donations if CCB didn't recognize my talent.
So what? Bryce hissed. Isn't this the only bit of good that being a princess entails?
No, it's the opposite.
Juniper was absolutely screaming with rage. Bryce started shaking.
I have worked my entire life for this, Bryce. My entire life. And you step in and take that accomplishment away from me. Make yourself, not me, not my talent, into the reason I got this promotion, the reason I made history. You, not me. Not me sticking it out, fighting through it, but my fey princess friend, who couldn't leave well enough alone.
The clock chimed in the hallway. Bryce had to go, had to talk to the Archangel. Look, I'm about to go into a meeting, she said as evenly as she could, though she thought she might puke. But I'll call you back right after, I promise. I'm so sorry if-
Don't bother, June snapped.
Juniper- The fawn hung up. Bryce focused on her breathing. She needed one of Kira's dance classes immediately. Needed to sweat and breathe and majorly unload and analyze the tornado wreaking havoc inside her. But this meeting? She squared her shoulders, putting away the fight, the fact that she'd fucked everything up, had been so arrogant and stupid, and... She knocked on the door to Celestina's office.
Enter,
came the sweet female voice. Bryce smiled at the governor as if she hadn't destroyed a friendship moments ago. Your Grace, Bryce said, inclining her head.
Your Highness,
Celestina answered, and Bryce reined in a wince. It was how she'd gotten this meeting, too. She'd asked the Archangel to meet not as Bryce Quinlan, but as a princess of the Fae. It was an invitation even an Archangel had to agree to. She wondered how it had come back to haunt her. Just for this meeting, Bryce said, sitting down. I've come to make a formal request.
For the return of Hunt Athalar, I take it.
A tired, sad sort of light gleamed in the governor's eyes. A temporary return, Bryce said, and leaned back in her chair. I know he bailed on you at your party. If I'd been aware he was doing that, I would never have asked him to assist me that night. So, totally feel free to punish him. You have my blessing. It was a lie, but Celestina's lips twitched upward.
How long do you want him for?
A night. To go to the Coronal Islands and back, before Pippa Spetsos and her cabal could get there. To convince whoever command sent not to give Spetsos free rein to unleash those weapons on Valbara.
We figured we'd take the Aero train instead of driving the 8 hours each way.
I promised my mother I'd bring him home with me. If he doesn't come, there will be hell to pay. Another lie. But the governor smiled fully at that.
Your mother is a fearsome creature?
Oh, yeah. And if Hunt's not there, every bad thing she thinks about him will be confirmed.
She doesn't like him.
She doesn't like any male.
No one is good enough for me, according to her.
You have no idea how hard dating was when I was younger.
Try being an archangel in a small community, Celestina said, and smiled genuinely.
Bryce grinned. Everyone was intimidated?
Some ran screaming.
Bryce laughed, and marveled that she did so, hated that she had to lie to this warm, kind female. Celestina hooked a curl behind her ear.
So a great deal is riding on Athalar's visit.
Yeah, it's not like I need her permission to be with him, but it'd be nice to have her approval.
I'm sure it would.
Celestina's smile turned sad. Bryce knew it wasn't her place, but she asked, How are you and Ephraim getting along? A shadow flickered across Celestina's face, confirmation that she wasn't contented.
He's a thorough lover.
But, she said deliberately, warning sharpening her voice.
But he has been my friend for many years. I find that I am now getting to know him in a whole new way.
Celestina deserved so much more than that. Bryce sighed. I know you're like an archangel, but if you ever need some girl talk, I'm here. The last governor she'd spoken to had tried to kill her, and she'd put a bullet in his head. This was a nice change. Celestina smiled again, that warmth and relief returning to her features.
I'd like that very much, Your Highness.
Bryce, in this instance.
Bryce.
Her eyes twinkled.
Take Athalar home, and keep him there.
Bryce's brows rose. Permanently?
Not at your parents' house. I mean take him with you to your family, and then he may live with you once more. He's been moping around so much that he's bringing down morale. I'll send him your way tomorrow morning. Let him stew one more night before I tell him at dawn.
Bryce beamed.
Thank you. I mean it, thank you so much.
But the governor waved a hand.
You're doing me a favor, trust me.
Bryce made a call on her way to her next stop. Fury answered right before it went to audio mail.
You fucked up, Bryce.
Bryce cringed. I know, I'm really sorry.
I get why you did it, I really do. But she is devastated.
Bryce stepped off the elevator and swallowed the lump in her throat. Please tell her I'm so sorry. I'm so freaking sorry. I was trying to help, and I didn't think.
I know, Fury said. But I'm not getting in the middle of this.
You're her girlfriend.
Exactly. And you're her friend, and mine. I'm not playing the messenger. Give her some time, then try to talk it out.
Bryce sagged against a worn wall. Okay, how long?
A few weeks.
That's ages.
Devastated, remember?
Bryce rubbed at her chest, the unlit scar there.
Fuck. Start thinking of big ways to apologize,
Fury said, then added.
You ever figure that thing out with Danica or the kid?
Not yet. Wanna help? It was as much as she'd risk saying on the phone.
No, I'm not getting in the middle of that shit either.
Why?
I have a lot of good things going on right now, Fury said. June is one of them. I'm not jeopardizing any of it, or her safety.
But,
big apology. Don't forget.
Fury hung up. Bryce swallowed her nausea, her self-disgust and hatred. She walked down the quiet hall to a familiar door, then knocked. She was rewarded by the sight of Hunt opening the door, shirtless and wearing his backward sunball hat, gleaming with sweat. He must have just returned from the gym. He jolted. What are you? She cut him off with a kiss, throwing her arms around his neck. He laughed, but his hands encircled her waist, lifting her high enough that she wrapped her legs around his middle. He slowed the kiss, his tongue driving deep, exploring her mouth.
Hi,
he said against her lips and kissed her again. I wanted to tell you the news, she said, kissing his jaw, his neck. He'd already hardened against her. She went molten.
Yeah?
His hands roamed over her ass, kneading and stroking.
Tomorrow morning, she said, kissing his mouth again and again. You're out of here.
He dropped her, not entirely, but swiftly enough that her feet hit the ground with a thud.
What?
She ran her hands down his sweat-slick, muscled chest, then toyed with the band of his pants, ran a finger up the length of him, jutting out with impressive demand.
We're going on a little vacation, so do a good job of seeming like you're still brooding tonight.
What? He repeated. She kissed his peck, running her mouth over the taut brown nipple. He groaned softly, his hand sliding into her hair.
Pack a swimsuit, she murmured.
A male voice chuckled behind them, and Bryce went rigid, whirling to find Pollux, arms slung around a beautiful female's shoulders, walking by.
Is he paying you by the hour? The hammer asked.
The female, the hind, snickered, but said nothing as they approached. Solas, she was beautiful and terrible. She'd tortured countless people, killed them, probably including Sophie Renast. If Cormac saw her, if he got this close, would he take the risk and try to end her? The hind's amber eyes gleamed as they met Bryce's, as if she knew every thought in her head. The deer shifter smiled in invitation. But the hind and the hammer continued on, for all the world looking like a normal couple from behind. Bryce couldn't help herself as she said to Pollux's back,
You really need to come up with some new material, Pollux.
He glared over a shoulder, white wings tucking in tight, but Bryce smiled sweetly, and he mercifully kept walking, his wretched lover with him. Bryce found Hunt smiling beside her, and it lightened any guilt about Juniper, any frustration with Fury, any fear and dread at being so close to the hind even as she yearned to tell him everything. Hunt tugged her hand, making to pull her into his room, but she planted her feet.
Tomorrow morning, she said hoarsely, her very bones aching with need. Meet me at home.
She'd tell him everything then. All the insane shit that had gone on since they'd last seen each other. Hunt nodded, hearing what she didn't say. He tugged her again, and she went to him, tilting back her head to receive his kiss. His hand slipped down the front of her leggings. He growled against her mouth as his fingers found the slickness waiting for him. She whimpered as he rubbed over her clit in a luxurious, taunting circle.
I'll see you at dawn, Quinlan.
With a nip at her bottom lip, Hunt stepped back into his room, and as he shut the door, he licked his fingers clean. Ethan blinked at the phone ringing in his hand.
Prime.
Every Valbaran wolf had the Prime's number in their phones, but Ethan had never once called it, and the Prime of Wolves had never once called him. It couldn't be good. He halted midway down the alley, neon signs casting pools of color on the cobblestones beneath his boots. Sucking in a breath, he answered, Hello?
Ethan Holstrom.
He bowed his head, even though the Prime couldn't see him.
Yes, Prime.
The withered old voice was heavy with age.
I was informed today that you are no longer residing at the Den.
On Sabine's order, yes.
Why?
Ethan swallowed. He didn't dare say why. Sabine would deny it anyway. Sabine was the male's daughter.
Tell me why.
A hint of the alpha the Prime had been during his younger years came through in his voice. This male had made the Fendir family a force to be reckoned with in Valbara.
Perhaps ask your daughter.
I want to hear it from you, Pop.
Ethan's throat worked.
It was punishment for disobeying her orders during the attack this spring and helping the humans in Asphodel Meadows. And punishment for praising Bryce Quinlan's actions during the attack in a magazine article.
I see.
Apparently, that was all the Prime needed.
What do you plan to do now?
Ethan straightened.
I'm, Living with Prince Rune Danon and his friends, helping them out in the Fae Division of the Ox. Helping with a rebellion.
Is that where you wish to be?
Is there an alternative? A drawn-out, two-tenths pause.
I would make you alpha of your own pack. You have it in you. I've sensed it. For too long you have suppressed it, so others might lead.
The ground beneath Ethan seemed to rock. What about Sabine? Ethan's head swirled.
I shall deal with my daughter, if this is what you choose.
Ethan had no fucking idea who'd even be in his pack. He'd locked himself out so thoroughly from old friends and family after Connor's death that he'd only bothered to associate with Amelie's pack. Perry was the closest thing he had to a friend at the Den, and she'd never leave her sister's side. Ethan swallowed hard.
I'm honored, but I need to think about this. You have been through a great deal, boy. Take the time you need to decide, but know the offer stands. I would not lose another wolf of worth, especially to the Fae.
Before Ethan could say goodbye, the old wolf hung up. Stunned and reeling, Ethan leaned against one of the brick buildings in the alley. Alpha. But an alpha in Sabine's shadow, once the prime was gone. Sabine would be his prime. Amelie would reign as her prime apparent, and then prime when Sabine herself was gone. He had little interest in serving either of them. But was it a betrayal of the wolves, of his brother's legacy, to leave the Valbaran packs to Sabine's cruelty? He brushed his hair back from his face. It was longer than it had ever been while playing sunball. He couldn't tell if he liked it or not. Fuck, he couldn't tell if he liked himself or not. Straightening, Ethan pushed off the wall and finished his walk, arriving at his destination. The towering doors to the astronomer's building of horrors were shut. Ethan pulled the crescent moon door chime once. No answer. He pulled it a second time, then pressed an ear to one of the metal doors, listening for any hint of life. Not even a footstep, though he could make out the hum of the machines beyond. He knocked twice, then pressed his shoulder into the door. It opened with a groan, nothing but darkness beyond. Ethan slipped in, silently shutting the heavy door behind him. Hello? Nothing. He aimed for the faint pale glow of the three tanks in the center of the cavernous space. He'd never seen anything so strange and unsettling, the three beings who'd been sold into this life. Existence. This sure as fuck wasn't a life. Not that he'd know. He hadn't had one in 2 years. Their visit last week had lingered like an unhealed wound. He might have walked out of here condemning everything he'd seen, but he'd still given the astronomer his money, kept this place running. He knew it bugged Bryce, but she'd been swept back into the shit with Danica, and as a princess, her hands were tied as far as a public scene. Especially when she walked such a dangerous line these days. Any additional bit of scrutiny might be her downfall. But no one gave a fuck about him, no matter what the prime had said. Hello? He called again, the word echoing into the dimness.
He's not here,
rasped a hoarse female voice. Ethan whirled, reaching for his gun as he scanned the darkness. His wolf sight pierced through it, allowing him to make out the speaker's location. His hand dropped from his hip at the sight of her. Long chestnut-brown hair draped over her two thin, pale limbs, her body clad in that white shift that all three mystics wore. Her dark eyes were still, like she was only half there, a face that might have been pretty if it weren't so gaunt, so haunted. Ethan swallowed, slowly approaching where she huddled against the wall, bony knees clutched to her chest.
I wanted to see your boss.
He couldn't say owner, even though that's what the old creep was. In the gloom, he could make out a work table beyond the mystic sitting on the floor,
with a small box atop it. Light filtered out from the box, and he had a good idea of what was kept inside it. Who were kept inside it, trapped in those four rings, which were apparently valuable enough that the old male had left them behind, rather than risk them in the city at large. The mystic's rasping voice sounded as if she hadn't spoken in ages.
He put the other two back in, but didn't have the part he needed to fix my machine. He's at the meat market, meeting with the Viper Queen.
Ethan sniffed, trying to get a read on her. All he could get from this distance was salt, like it had brined the scent right out of her.
You know when he'll be back?
She only stared at him, like she was still hooked up to the machine beyond them.
You were the one who freed me.
Solas, she sat with such veneer stillness. He'd never realized how much he moved until he stood before her, and he'd considered himself capable of a wolf's utter stillness.
Yeah, sorry.
But the word stuck. Freed. She'd been pleading to go back. He'd assumed she'd meant into the between place where the mystics roamed, but what if she'd meant to this world, back to her life before, the family who had sold her into this? Not his problem, not his issue to solve, but he still asked.
Are you okay?
She didn't look okay. She sat the way he had in his dorm bathroom the night he'd learned that Connor was dead. The mystic only said,
He will be back soon.
Then I'll wait for him.
He will not be pleased.
Ethan offered her a reassuring smile.
I can pay, don't worry.
You've caused him a great deal of inconvenience. He'll kick you out.
Ethan took a step closer.
Can you help me, then?
I can't do anything unless I'm in the tank. And I don't know how to use the machines to ask the others.
All right.
She angled her head.
What do you want to know?
He swallowed hard.
Was it true what the demon prince said about my brother being safe for now?
She frowned, her full mouth unnaturally pale.
I could only sense the other's terror,
she said, nodding toward the tanks.
Not what was said.
Ethan rubbed the back of his neck.
All right, thanks. That's all I needed.
He had to know for sure that Connor was safe. There had to be some way to help him, she said.
You could find a necromancer. They would know the truth.
Necromancers are few and far between and highly regulated, Ethan said. But thanks again, and, good luck.
He turned back toward the doors. The mystic shifted slightly, and the movement sent a whisper of her scent toward him. Snow and embers and... Ethan went rigid, whirled to her.
You're a wolf. What are you doing here?
She didn't answer.
Your pack allowed this to happen?
Rage boiled in his blood. Claws appeared at his fingertips.
My parents had no pack,
she said hoarsely.
They roamed the tundra of Nenya with me and my 10 siblings. My gifts became apparent when I was 3. By 4, I was in there.
She pointed to the tank, and Ethan recoiled in horror. A wolf family had sold their pup, and she'd gone into that tank.
How long?
He asked, unable to stop his trembling anger.
How long have you been in here?
She shook her head.
I don't know.
When were you born? What year?
I don't know. I don't even remember how long it's been since I made the drop. He had some official come here to market, but I don't remember.
Ethan rubbed at his chest.
Solas.
She appeared as young as him, but among the Vanir that meant nothing. She could be hundreds of years old. Gods, how had she even made the drop here?
What's your name? Your family name?
My parents never named me, and I never learned their names beyond mother and father.
Her voice sharpened, a hint of temper shining through.
You should leave.
You can't be in here.
There's a contract that suggests otherwise.
You are a wolf, he snarled. You're kept in a fucking cage here.
He'd go right to the Prime, make him order the astronomer to free this unnamed female.
My siblings and parents are able to eat and live comfortably because I am here. That will cease when I am gone. They will again starve.
Too fucking bad,
Ethan said, but he could see it, the determination in her expression that told him he wasn't going to pry her out of here, and he could understand it. That need to give over all of herself so that her family could survive. So he amended.
My name is Ethan Holstrom. You ever want to get out of here? Send word.
He had no idea how, but maybe he'd check in on her every few months, come up with excuses to ask her questions. Caution flooded her eyes, but she nodded. It occurred to him then that she was likely sitting on the cold floor because her thin legs had atrophied from being in the tank for so long. That old piece of shit had left her here like this. Ethan scanned the space for anything resembling a blanket and found nothing. He only had his t-shirt, and as he reached for the hem, she said,
Don't. He'll know you were here.
Good.
She shook her head.
He's possessive. If he even thinks I've had contact with someone other than him, he'll send me down to hell with an unimportant question.
She trembled slightly. He'd done it before.
Why?
Demons like to play,
she whispered. Ethan's throat closed up.
You sure you don't want to leave? I can carry you right now, and we'll figure out the other shit. The Prime will protect you.
You know the Prime?
Her voice filled with whispered awe.
I only heard my parents speak of him when I was young.
So they hadn't been entirely shut off from the world then.
He'll help you. I'll help you.
Her face again became aloof.
You must go.
Fine.
Fine,
she echoed back, with a hint of that temper again. A bit of dominance that had the wolf in him perking up. He met her stare. Not just a bit of dominance. That was a glimmer of an alpha's dominance. His knees buckled slightly, his wolf instinct weighing whether to challenge or bow. An alpha, here in a tank. She would likely have been her family's heir then. Had they known what she was, even at age 4? He suppressed a growl. Had her parents sent her here because she'd be a threat to their rule over the family? But Ethan shoved the questions aside, back toward the doors again.
You should have a name.
Well, I don't,
she shot back. Definitely, Alpha, with that tone, that glimmer of unbending backbone. Someone the wolf in him would have liked to tangle with. And to leave her here? It didn't sit right. With him, with the wolf in his heart, broken and lonely as it might have been. He had to do something, anything, but since she clearly wasn't going to leave this place, maybe there was someone else he could help. Ethan eyed the small box on the work table and didn't question himself as he snatched it up. She tried and failed to rise, her weakened legs betraying her.
He will kill you for taking them.
Ethan strode to the doors, the box of fire sprites trapped inside their rings in hand.
If he's got a problem with it, he can take it up with the Prime.
And explain why he was holding a wolf captive in here. Her throat bobbed, but she said nothing more. So Ethan stalked outside, onto the jarringly normal street beyond, and shut the heavy door behind him. But despite the distance he quickly put between himself and the mystics, his thoughts circled back to her, again and again. The wolf with no name, trapped in the dark.
I'm requesting an aquatic team of 25 for tomorrow, Therian said to his queen, hands clenched behind his back, tail fanning idly in the river current.
The river queen sat in her humanoid form among a bed of rocky coral beside her throne, weaving sea nettle, her dark blue gown drifting around her.
No,
she said simply. Therion blinked. We have solid intel that this shipment is coming from Pangera, and that Pippa Spetsos is likely already there. You want me to capture her? To interrogate her about Emile's whereabouts? I'm going to need backup.
And have so many witnesses mark the Blue Court's involvement.
What is our involvement? Therion didn't dare ask. What's your stake in this beyond wanting the kid's power? His queen went on.
You will go, and go alone. I take it your current cadre of people will be with you.
Yes.
That should be enough to question her, given your companion's powers.
Even 5 mayor agents.
Just you, Therion.
He couldn't stop himself as he said. Some people might think you were trying to kill me off, you know.
Slowly, so slowly the River Queen turned from her weaving. He could have sworn a tremor went through the riverbed. But her voice was dangerously smooth as she said,
Then defend my honor against such slander, and return alive.
He clenched his jaw, but bowed his head.
Shall I say goodbye to your daughter, then, in case it is my last chance to do so?
Her lips curled upward.
I think you've caused her enough distress already.
The words struck true. She might be a monster in so many ways, but she was right about him in that regard. So Therion swam into the clear blue, letting the current pound the anger from his head. If there was a chance of attaining Emile's power, the River Queen would snatch it up. Therion hoped he had it in himself to stop her. The chairs had turned into velvet couches on the Dream Bridge. Rune slid into his, surveying the endless dark surrounding him. He peered past the fainting couch to Day's side. If he were to follow her that way, would he wind up in her mind, see the things she saw, look through her eyes and know who she was, where she was? Would he be able to read every thought in her head? He could speak into someone's mind, but to actually enter it, to read thoughts as his cousins in Avaling could. Was this how they did it? It seemed like such a gross violation, but if she invited him, if she wanted him in there, could he manage it? Flame rippled before him, and there she was, sprawled on the couch.
Hey, he said, sitting back in his couch.
Any information to report?
She said by way of greeting.
So we're doing the formal thing tonight.
She sat up straighter.
This bridge is a path for information. It's our first and greatest duty. If you're coming here for someone to flirt with, I suggest you look elsewhere.
He snorted.
You think I'm flirting with you?
Would you say hey in that manner to a male agent?
Probably, yeah. But he conceded. Not with the same tone, though.
Exactly.
Well, you caught me. I'm ready for my punishment.
She laughed, a full throaty sound that he'd never heard before.
I don't think you could handle the sort of punishment I dole out.
His balls tightened. He couldn't help it.
We talking restraints? Flogging?
He could have sworn he got a flash of teeth biting into a lower lip.
Neither. I don't care for any of that in bed. But what do you prefer?
It's always the lady's choice with me. I'm game for anything.
She angled her head, a waterfall of flame spilling down the side of the couch, as if she draped long, lovely hair over it.
So you're not a dominant male?
Oh, I'm dominant, he said, grinning. I'm just not into pressuring my partners into doing anything they don't like.
She studied him at that.
You say dominant with such pride. Are you a wolf, then? Some sort of shifter?
Look who's trying to figure me out now.
Are you?
No. Are you a wolf?
Do I seem like one to you?
No. You seem like
someone crafted of air and dreams and cold vengeance.
I'm guessing you're in sky and breath.
She went still,
Had he struck true?
Why do you say that?
You remind me of the wind. He tried to explain. Powerful, and able to cool or freeze with half a thought, shaping the world itself, though no one can see you. Only your impact on things. He added, it seems lonely now that I'm saying it.
It is,
she said, and he was stunned that she'd admitted it.
But thank you for the kind words.
Were they kind?
They were accurate. You see me. It's more than I can say about anyone else.
For a moment, they stared at each other. He was rewarded by a shifting of her flame, revealing large eyes that swept upward at the edges, crafted a fire, but he could still make out their shape. The clarity in them before her flame veiled her once more. He cleared his throat. I guess I should tell you that the rebels were successful with their hit on the spine. They're bringing over the Asteri's mech prototype to the Coronal Islands tomorrow night. She straightened.
Why?
I don't know. I was told by my informant. A rebel contingent will be there to receive the shipment. Where it goes from there, I don't know. Cormac wanted Athalar to examine the Asteri's prototype, see how it differed from the humans that the Angel had faced so often in battle. Because Athalar was the only one among them who'd faced off against a mech suit, who'd apparently spent time in Pangera taking them apart and putting them back together again. Cormac, as he'd been fighting alongside the human rebels, had never battled one, and he wanted an outside opinion on whether replicating the Asteri's model would be beneficial. And because Athalar was going, Bryce was going. And because Bryce was going, Rune was going. And Therian would join them, as the River Queen had ordered him to do. Flynn, Deck, and Ethan would remain. Too many people going would raise suspicions, but they'd been pissed to learn of it. You're benching poor Holstrom, Flynn had complained. Deck had added, do you know what that does to a male's ego? Ethan had only grunted his agreement, but hadn't argued, a distant expression on his face, like the wolf's mind was elsewhere.
Who's going to be there?
He angled his head. We got word that Pippa Spetsos and her Lightfall squadron will also be present. We have some questions for her about a missing person. She straightened.
Is Spetsos being given command of the Valbaran front?
I don't know, but we're hoping we can convince whoever is there from command otherwise. We suspect that she and Lightfall have left a trail of bodies all around the countryside.
Day was quiet for a moment, then asked, do you know the name of the ship that's carrying the prototype?
No.
What island?
Why are you grilling me on this?
I want to make sure it's not a trap.
He grinned. Because you'd miss me if I died?
Because of the information they'd squeeze from you before you did.
Cold, Day. Real cold.
She laughed softly. It's the only way to survive.
It was. We're going to Idra, that's all I know.
She nodded, like the name meant something to her. If they catch you, running is your best option. Don't fight.
I'm not programmed that way.
Then reprogram yourself.
He crossed his arms. I don't think I... Day hissed, bending over. She twitched, almost convulsing. Day? She sucked in a breath, then was gone.
Day!
His voice echoed across the void. He didn't think. Launching over the fainting couch, he sprinted down her end of the bridge, into the dark and night, flinging himself after her. Rune slammed into a wall of black adamant. Time slowed, bringing with it flashes of sensation. No images, all touch. Bones grinding in her left wrist from where it was being squeezed tight enough to hurt. It was the pain that had awoken her, pulled her away from the bridge. Willing herself to yield, give over, become his, to find some way to savor this, teeth scraping at her nipple, clamping down. Rune collided with the ground, the sensations vanishing. He surged to his feet, pressing a palm against the black wall. Nothing, no echo to tell him what was happening. Well, He knew what was happening. He'd gotten the sense of very rough sex, and though he had the distant feeling that it was consensual, it wasn't meaningful. Whoever slept at her side had woken her with it. The impenetrable black loomed before him, the wall of her mind. He had no idea why he waited, why he stayed, had no idea how much time passed until a flame once more emerged from that wall. Her fire had banked enough that he could make out long legs walking toward him, halting upon finding him kneeling. Then she dropped to her knees as well, flame again swallowing her whole.
"Are you all right?"
he asked.
"Yes."
The word was a hiss of embers being extinguished.
"What was that?"
"You've never had sex before."
He straightened at the slicing question.
"Are you all right?"
he asked again.
"I said I was."
"You weren't?"
"No," he asked, albeit a bit suddenly, and I said yes.
Rune's insides twisted at the utter iciness.
"You don't seem to have enjoyed it."
"Is it your business whether I find release or not?"
"Did you?"
"Excuse me?"
"Did you orgasm?"
"That's absolutely none of your business."
"You're right."
Again, silence fell, but they remained kneeling there face to face. She said, after a tense moment,
"I hate him. No one knows it, but I do. He disgusts me."
"Then why sleep with him?"
"Because I..."
A long sigh.
"It's complicated."
"Indulge me."
"Do you only sleep with people you like?"
"Yes."
"You've never fucked someone you hate?"
He considered, even as the sound of her saying the word fucked did something to his cock.
"All right, maybe once, but it was an ex."
A fey female he'd dated decades ago, who he hadn't cared to remember until now.
"Then you can think of this like that."
"So he's..."
"I don't want to talk about him."
Rune blew out a breath.
"I wanted to make sure you're okay. You scared the shit out of me."
"Why?"
"One moment you were here, the next you were gone. It seemed like you were in pain."
"Don't be a fool and get attached enough to worry."
"I'd be a monster not to care whether another person is hurt."
"There's no place for that in this war. The sooner you realize it, the less pain you'll feel."
"So, we're back to the Ice Queen routine."
She drew up.
"Routine?
Where's the wild and crazy female I was talking about bondage with earlier?"
She laughed. He liked the sound. It was low and throaty and predatory. Fuck, he liked that sound a lot.
"You are such a typical Valbaran male."
"I told you. Come visit me in Lunathian. I'll show you a good time, Day."
"So eager to meet me."
"I like the sound of your voice. I want to know the face behind it."
"That's not going to happen, but thank you."
She added after a moment,
"I like the sound of your voice, too."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah," she chuckled. "Your trouble."
"Is it cliche if I say that trouble is my middle name?"
"Oh yes, very."
"What would your middle name be?"
he teased.
Her flames pulled back, revealing those eyes of pure fire.
"Retribution."
He grinned wickedly.
"Badass."
She laughed again, and his cock hardened at the sound.
"Goodbye, Knight."
"Where are you going?"
"To sleep. Properly."
"Isn't your body resting?"
"Yes, but my mind is not."
He didn't know why, but he gestured to her fainting couch.
"Then sit back. Relax."
"You want me to stay?"
"Honestly, yeah, I do."
"Why?"
"Because I feel calm around you. There's so much shit going down, and I like being here with you."
"I don't think most females would be flattered to be called calming by a handsome male."
"Who says I'm handsome?"
"You talk like someone who's well aware of his good looks."
"Like an arrogant asshole, then."
"Your words, not mine."
Day rose to her feet, striding to the fainting couch. Her flames rippled as she lay upon it, and Rune jumped onto his own couch.
All I need is a TV and a beer, and I'm set, he said.
She snickered, curling on her side.
As I said, typical Valbaran male.
Rune closed his eyes, bathing in the timbre of her voice.
You gotta work on those compliments, Day.
Another chuckle, sleepier this time.
I'll add it to my to-do list, night.
Chapter 43 Hunt breathed in the cool air off the turquoise sea, admiring the pristine water, so clear that he could see the corals and rocks and the fish darting among them. Down in the quay, hidden in a massive cavern, the cargo ship was still being unloaded. The sea cave, tucked into an isolated, arid part of Idra, one of the more remote coronal islands, ran at least a mile inland. It had been selected because the water flowing within it ran so deep enough for massive cargo ships to slide into its stone-hewed dock and unload their contraband. Hunt stood in the shadows just within the mouth of the cave, focusing on the bright open water ahead, and not the reek of the oil on the ancient mech suits currently helping to unload the ship into the fleet of awaiting vehicles. Laundry trucks, food trucks, moving trucks, anything that might reasonably inch along one of the island's steeply curving roads, or board one of the auto ferries shuttling vehicles between the 100 or so islands of this archipelago, without raising too much suspicion. Cormac had teleported everyone to Idra an hour ago. Hunt had nearly puked during the 5-minute-long trip with several stops. When they'd finally arrived, he'd sat his ass on the damp concrete, head between his knees. Cormac had gone back again and again until all of them were here. And then the poor fuck had to go head-to-head with whoever was in charge from command to convince them Pippa Spetsos shouldn't be anywhere near this shit. Cormac had been unsteady on his feet, pale from the teleporting, but had left them with the promise to return soon. Bryce, Therian, and Rune all sat on the ground, apparently not trusting their legs yet either. Hunt hadn't failed to notice that Rune kept reaching over his shoulder, as if to seek the reassuring presence of the Star Sword. But the prince had left the blade back in Lunathian, not wanting to risk losing it here if all hell broke loose. It seemed the male was missing his security blanket, as their stomachs and minds settled.
I shouldn't have eaten breakfast, Therian was saying, a hand on his abs.
He wore only tight black aquatic leggings, equipped along the thighs with holsters for knives. No shoes or shirt. If he needed to shift into his mare form, he'd said upon arriving at Bryce's place this morning, he didn't want to lose much. Therian's timing had been unfortunate. He'd arrived at the apartment right after Hunt. Bryce was already propped up on the counter, gripping Hunt's shoulders while he lazily licked up her neck. Therian's knock on the door was unwelcome. That would all have to wait, but his mate had gotten him out of the barracks. He'd repay her generously tonight. Bryce now patted Therian's bare shoulder.
I'm weirdly satisfied that a mare can get airsick, considering how many of us suffer from seasickness.
He's still green, too, Therian said, pointing to Hunt, who grinned weakly.
But Therian went back to idly observing the cave around them, perhaps too idly. Hunt knew Therian's main objective, get Pippa to talk about Emile. Whether that interrogation would be friendly was up to the mare captain. Rune murmured,
Incoming.
They all turned toward the cargo ship to see Cormac striding over to them. Still pale and drained, Hunt had no idea how he'd get them all out of here when this was over. But Hunt tensed at the fury simmering off Cormac.
What's up?
Hunt said, eyeing the cave interior beyond Cormac. Therian's attention drifted that way as well, his long body easing into a crouch, ready to spring into action. Cormac shook his head and said,
Pippa's already got her claws in them. They're all eaten out of her hand. The weapons are hers, and she's now in charge of the Valbaran front.
Therian frowned, but scanned the space behind the Avalon prince.
Anything about Emil or Sophie?
No, she didn't say a word about them, and I couldn't risk asking. I don't want her to know we're on the hunt as well.
Cormac paced. A confrontation about Emil in front of the others would likely lead to bloodshed. We can only play along. Any chance of isolating her? Therian pressed. Cormac shook his head.
No. Believe me, she'll be on her guard as much as we are. You want to drag her off for questioning? You're going to have a battle on your hands.
Therian swore, and Bryce patted his knee in what Hunt could only guess was an attempt at consolation. Cormac faced Hunt.
Athalar, you're up.
He jerked his head to the massive ship. They're unloading the new prototype right now. In silence, they followed the prince, Hunt keeping close to Bryce. The rebels, all in black, many with hats or masks on, stared at them as they passed. None of them smiled. One man grumbled,
"Vaynir pricks."
Therian blew him a kiss. Rune growled,
"Play nice,"
Bryce hissed at her brother, pinching his side through his black t-shirt. Rune batted her away with a tattooed hand.
"Real mature,"
Hunt muttered as they halted at the foot of the loading platform. Rune subtly flipped him off. Bryce pinched Hunt's side, too. But Therian let out a low whistle as four rusty mech suits emerged from the ship's hold, each carrying the corner of a massive box.
It looked like a metal sarcophagus, carved with the insignia of the Asteri. 7 stars around SPQM.
The humans piloting the old model mech suits didn't so much as glance to the side as they carried the box down the ramp, the ground thudding beneath the machine's massive feet.
"Those suits are for battle, not manual labor,"
Therian murmured.
12 gunners. They're the strongest of the human models.
Hunt inclined his head to the twin double guns at the shoulder, the guns on each of the forearms.
6 visible guns. 6 hidden ones, and one of those is a cannon.
Bryce grimaced.
How many of these suits do the humans have?
A few hundred,
Cormac answered.
The Asteri have bombed enough of our factories that these suits are all old, though. The Imperial prototype that they're carrying could give us new technology, if we can study it.
Bryce murmured. And no one is worried about giving this stuff over to trigger-happy Pippa?
No.
Cormac replied gravely.
Not one of them.
But they're cool with us examining the suit?
Bryce asked.
I told them Athalar would have some insight into how they're constructed.
Hunt clicked his tongue.
No pressure, huh?
He suppressed the memory of Sandriel's face, her cruel amusement as she watched what he'd done to the suits on her orders.
The suits and their pilots reached the concrete quay,
and someone barked an order that dispersed the various rebels working the docks, until only a unit of 12 rebels, all humans, lingered behind Hunt and the others. Hunt liked that about as much as the fact that they were here at all, on a fucking rebel base, officially aiding Ophion. He kept his breathing slow and steady. The unit of rebels marched past them, climbing into the vessel, and the mech pilots stomped off, leaving the sarcophagus behind. A heartbeat later, a human female, brown-haired and freckled, emerged from the shadows beside the boat. From the way Cormac tensed, Hunt knew who it was. He noted that she wore the uniform of the Lightfall Squadron. All the rebels who'd gone by had borne armbands with the sinking sun emblem. Hunt put his hand in easy reach of the gun at his thigh, lightning writhing in his veins. Bryce angled her body, already eyeing up the best shot. Therian drifted a few feet to the left, positioning Pippa between himself and the water, as if he'd tackle her into it. But Pippa moved casually to the other side of the sarcophagus, as she said to Cormac.
"The code to that box is 73425.
Her voice was smooth and fancy, like she was some rich Panjaran kid playing at being a rebel. She said to Hunt,
"We're waiting with bated breath for your analysis, Umbra Mortis."
It was practically an order. Hunt stared at her from under lowered brows. He knew he was recognizable, but the way she said his name definitely carried a threat. Pippa shifted her attention to Cormac.
I wondered when you'd try to turn them against me.
Hunt and Bryce drew close, guns at their fingertips now. Rune kept a step back, guarding their rear. And Therian? The mayor had silently shifted positions again, putting himself within a few easy bounds of tackling Pippa.
I haven't said anything to them about you yet, Cormac said with impressive iciness.
Oh, then why were you in such a rush to get here? I can only assume it was for one of two reasons. To convince them to put you in charge of the Valbaran front, presumably by slandering me, or to try to capture me, so I can tell you everything I know about Emile Renast.
Who says both can't be true, Cormac countered.
Pippa grunted.
You needn't have bothered with capturing me. I would have worked with you to find him, but you wanted the glory for yourself.
We're talking about a child's life, Cormac snarled. You only want him as a weapon.
And you don't,
Pippa sneered at them all.
It must make it easier for you if you pretend you're better than I am.
Therian said, deadly soft.
We're not the ones torturing people to death for intel on the kid.
She frowned.
Is that what you think I've been up to? Those gruesome murders?
We found human sense and a piece of one of your soldiers on the kid's trail,
Therian growled, a hand drifting to his knives. Her lips curved into a cold smile.
You arrogant, narrow-minded Vanir, always thinking the worst of us humans.
She shook her head in mock sympathy.
You're too coiled up in your own snake's nest to see the truth, or to see who among you has a forked tongue.
True to form, Bryce stuck out her tongue at the soldier. Pippa only sneered.
Enough, Pippa.
Cormac punched the code into the small box at the foot of the sarcophagus. Bryce's eyes had narrowed, though. She held Pippa's gaze, and a chill went down Hunt's spine at the pure dominance in Bryce's face. Pippa drawled,
It is of no concern now, anyway. The boy has been deemed a waste of resources, especially now that we have better weapons to wield.
As if in answer, the lid popped open with a hiss, and Hunt threw an arm in front of Bryce as it slid aside. Smoke from dry ice billowed out, and Cormac cleared it away with a brush of his hand. Pippa said,
Well, Umbra Mortis, I await your insights.
I'd mind how you speak to him, Pippa,
Cormac warned her, voice sharp with authority. Pippa faced Bryce, though.
And you're Cormac's bride, yes.
No kindness, no warmth filled her tone. Bryce flashed the female a smile.
You can have the job if you want it so badly.
Pippa bristled, but Cormac gestured Hunt forward as the last of the smoke cleared. Hunt surveyed the suit in the box and swore.